TNKR Media.
Welcome to Inspiring Entrepreneurs Montreal, our 15th season, showcasing stories from outstanding business people, presented by BDO Canada. My name is Dan Delmar, along with Eros Malekic, who's sitting in for Mike Newton. Welcome back, Eros, another millennial show.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dan. I'm always happy to be part of the show.
And we have another Dan on the program today. Dan Amirani is the second generation leader of ARC Group Benefits. He and his dad run this group benefits business, and Dan is the director of sales and strategic partnerships at ARC. Eros, why did you choose this business?
So, you know what? I know Dan personally. I know the family well. There's a few members of the family that are involved actively in the business operations. I think what they've done in their industry is very innovative. You know, they've introduced technology into a business that's been around for a while. So I'm looking forward to hearing his take on how his family's business has helped other local businesses in Quebec with their tech platform and outside Quebec as well.
Ernie Furtz on the way as well, tax partner at BDO, with some very timely tax advice, of course, at this time of year. You want to stay tuned for that for business, of course. Let's start, though, with some current events stories. And Eros, this story from Fast Company, how to be a super communicator, habits of a great communicator in business. What are your thoughts on this story?
Yeah, so most of our success is dependent on how we work with other people. And I'm sure you know that very, very well, Dan. And, you know, at the core of how we work with other people is communication. So they have this author, Charles Duhigg, who's referenced in the article, and he has a piece called Super Communicators, How to Unlock the Secret Language of Connection. He did a research on why some people are so much better at communicating than others. And what he discovered then is quite interesting, is that you would naturally think that personality is a major factor. So in fact, it doesn't matter all that much. And it turns out that people who are really good communicators are not people who are necessarily super charismatic. They're not people who are necessarily extroverts either. And
good
personality,
to know.
Yeah, and personality doesn't matter all that very much. You know, if I think of myself, Dan, like I feel like I can have a decent conversation, and I am not the most extrovert person. You know, I think it also depends on the setting. I don't always like to be in big crowds. So there's different factors. So this Charles Duhigg says that what matters is understanding how the conversations work. So if you get that part, you're already way ahead of the game. And also showing the other person that you want to connect with them. So there's three types of conversations, and this is how the article breaks it down, which I find very interesting, is the first type of conversation is a practical discussion. So this is where, you know, you and the other party are figuring stuff out together. The second one is an emotional conversation. And this is where someone is saying, you know, I don't want you to solve my problem for me. I want you to really listen to me. They're not saying that, but that's what they inherently mean in having that type of emotional conversation with you. And then the third kind is a social conversation where, you know, it's an opportunity to relate to each other and to society in general. So again, the importance lies then in understanding which kind of conversation you're having, because if you're having different kinds of conversations at the same time, you're going to have trouble connecting. I can give you an example of this. I mean, it's typical in a household, right? Like family conversations, one spouse comes back from work. The other spouse is also exhausted from work or from whatever else is going on in their personal lives. And they're having a conversation about the first spouse's interactions at work with their boss. And, you know, the recipient or the person that's supposed to be listening makes a comment to the spouse saying, well, why don't you take your boss out to lunch and get to know each other a little bit better? So instead of being able to hear what their husband or wife is saying to them, they're offering a solution. And this gets the person who's kind of venting or complaining even more frustrated, because they're thinking, well, you're supposed to be on my side. So what's happening here is, in essence, one is reacting poorly to the advice of the other. And it's because one is having an emotional conversation and the other one is having a practical conversation. So again, that's why the first step in all of this is, what kind of conversation are you having? Is it going to set you up for a successful one? And then, The other, there's a few other things. One other tip the article references, which I found interesting, is asking deep questions. So you're having a conversation with someone, you want to know what they do for a living. Instead of saying, "What do? You could say, "What made you decide to become so and so?" Or "What do you like most about so and so?" And instead of asking, "Where do you live?" you could say, "Well, what do you like about your neighborhood?" And when you ask these type of deep questions, it often provides the person with an opportunity to reveal something about themselves in return. Look, Dan, you're in media production, so I would love to hear your take on all of this and what you feel makes a good super communicator.
Thanks. Yeah, I am. I mean, I've devoted a lot of my career to producing conversations. So once people want to have the conversation, it becomes a question of how do you have it? Where do you have it? How do you promote it? So to be a super communicator, in terms of the practical logistics of it, so three steps that I keep in mind. One is the format. So once you know what you want to talk about, where are you going to talk about it and in what form? Is it going to be a podcast like Inspiring Entrepreneurs? Is it going to be a blog? Is it going to be a YouTube seminar or webinar? Is it going to be a press release? Lots of different options, of course, in the modern era. And every media mix is different for every client. So first you choose the format, then you get into the production, which includes research, something that a lot of marketers don't spend a lot of time on, but we work for professional services firms that require a ton of research and learning and reading, crucially, and synthesizing that information down to something that is palatable for audiences everywhere. So that's the production aspect of it, and sort of jamming that all of that information into the format of your choice in a way that works. And then comes the promotion, of course, which is the PR and or marketing aspect of it. So where are you going to share this conversation? Where are you starting? Is it going to start on social media? Ideally, you want to take baby steps on social media first. Then you're graduating perhaps to industry publications, newsletters, events in your field, and then you're moving up to the general public, to local media, regional media, then eventually national, international media. There's a process to it. So a lot of structure, I would say to recap is the key to be a good super communicator. And the piece makes a great point about introverts and extroverts because I'm definitely an introvert, and people are surprised often when they hear me on the radio. I don't go to a lot of public events. I don't do a lot of in-person networking to my own detriment, probably. But I don't think that makes me a bad communicator. It makes me someone who's more of an outsider and more of an observer, coming in from an outside perspective. So I think that's actually pretty valuable for me. So as long as you have a good system, you can overcome a lot. You can overcome your own personality, your own anxiety, as I do. To me, it's all about the system and the format.
Yeah, no, absolutely great advice. And you know what I think, in listening to you now and also off air, like you're authentic, and I think that matters a
Thanks.
lot. I think authenticity is an important piece of in all of this. You're the same Dan on air that I know off air, and I'm grateful for that. I appreciate you. I think the audience does as well. And look, if you look at who has been the most successful in business or in politics or on the team, one of the things that they usually have in common is they listen to other people and can get other people to listen to them. So being able to communicate is essential to, anything you do in life, and it's particularly true in a polarized world.
Thanks for the kind words, Euros. Also, you wanted to bring up one more piece that I thought was interesting. This from entrepreneur.com, how to keep your passion alive as your business grows. Any quick advice for people that have had a especially tough time over the pandemic, how to keep that passion ignited?
Yeah, so I mean, for a new entrepreneur, passion is fairly easy to sustain in the beginning. Everything's new and exciting. Unfortunately, once this, call it, new business feeling sort of tapers off, it can be difficult to stay passionate about, the work every single day. And I think that's normal. So I think it's just to be mindful of that and to find ways to, make it exciting. So this article gives some helpful insights on ways that you can build a business model that centers around keeping the passion alive and healthy. So number one is set clear and ambitious goals. Have milestones to look forward to reaching as a business. So an example of that is, you hit your first $1 million of sales. And if these goals seem sort of massive, find ways to, make micro objectives, you know, break it down, make it more palatable. Another goal could be reach a certain number of team members on your in your business. You know, that's exciting as well. You know, you're growing the business, maintaining positive cash flows, becoming an authority in your industry. So these are all targets that you can set for yourself. Number two, create a culture of innovation and improvement. So, you know, it doesn't matter how passionate you are about the business, a lack of passion in your team is going to drag down the organization. So take the time to listen to your customers, listen to your team. Change is a great way to, you know, combat that monotony and keep things interesting for the business.
From the communications perspective, to keep that passion going, I would also add, from the structural perspective in communications, a mission statement. Make sure you have a mission statement or some brand pillars to consult to keep yourself on track philosophically and in terms of the way you want to move your company. And they can change, by the way. You know, we started out as more of a PR company, now we're more of a content company. So it does change. But as long as you have those values and those pillars and that mission statement and a direction, then I think that takes you a long way.
Absolutely. And one more thing I'll say, Dan, is, you know, I think it's important for the entrepreneur, the owner, to take the time to unplug. You know, you got to recharge from time to time. And because the tone is really set at the top. So if you're not showing up every day 100%, the team will feel that.
And let's get right to our guest. We're talking with ARC Group Benefits. We have Dan Amirani. Welcome to Inspiring Entrepreneurs.
Thank you.
Please just tell me, what is ARC Group Benefits?
I mean, ARC Group Benefits is a lot of things. It's it started, you know, in its inception as a group benefits firm, and you know, it evolved from there into a lot of things. Yeah, from, you know, service to underwriting into really where we've been pivoting into, which is technology, finding new ways to better accompany our clients and continuing to, you know, have the ear to the ground. And the only way to evolve, in my perspective, in this industry, has been technology, and that's why we kind of moved into that pivot. So I'd say it's a group benefits firm that's disrupting into like an insure tech style of position.
And I think that's very interesting. You guys have over 20,000 employees protected now under the ARC Connect banner, if I'm not mistaken. And something I was reading, like over 50,000 claims paid monthly. So this is a significant amount of volume. Could you maybe bring us back to the beginning of how this business started?
So this, you know, I'll talk a little bit about the story. This business was built 27 years ago, founded this. And I'm sure it wasn't easy at the time, because going back 27 years, I was, again, much younger. That was the time where I think we kept cutting off his internet. You know, he's trying to get things up and running. And we were never allowed to even look at this business. It was like a whole other concept where he was going to just, you know, sell it one day and, you know, don't even think about it. It was really after, you know, graduation, where we were kind of sitting down, and a lot of things that were tackled, you know, through the studies kind of pertained to it. And I think the conversation matured and changed upon graduation, where it wasn't an expectation anymore. It was, you know, we can see where this can go. We could see what we can build. And like, is there more, you know, room now to like build something together? And I think that it brought a new life into the organization. That's, I think, really what helped push this pivot that we did, which was a big pivot for the organization, was, okay, there's new blood. Let's do what we need to do to make this evolve.
And when did this transition happen? Like, in the sense of, you know, you said you started 27 years ago. When did you and your siblings get involved? Did all the siblings get involved? Is it only a select few? How did that work out?
You know, it's funny, because all of us, because of the routes we took, we all were graduating at around the same time. And it's one thing that has been told to us time and time again. We've always had this mindset that we were going to build something. We were going to be entrepreneur, like, through and through. And we always wanted to do something together as well. You know, we're very close, me and my brothers. And I think coming out of there, we all saw, within a different respect, you know, where we could fit, where we could apply ourselves and bring value and change to the organization. And, you know, it was right out of university that we kind of hit the ground running. I don't think we were, you know, as useful day one, but I think we had some insights and, you know, we've made a lot of changes and helped speed things up. And there was a lot of guidance as well from my father, who would help us slow us down. Because, you know, when you're young and you're gunslinging, you're not thinking the same way as when you're maturing into your business career. So there was a lot of, you know, pros from both sides that were being shared. And I think that was something that really helped us, and also the openness to hear young ideas, you know, because a lot of times that's dismissed.
So Daniel, tell me about the industry before the pandemic. You know, was there a lot of convincing that had to be done? You know, did employers want to invest in benefits programs for their employees?
There was never any convincing because the bulk of the companies that we've dealt with already had benefits in place. I think a big thing was is that it was something that constantly is under review because, let's be real, it's a cost impact to the employees. And it's also a retaining tool. Like, employers want to make things, you know, competitive and, you know, attract and retain employees. So, you know, was there a different light that they can look at it in? And is there a different way that we can design it? Is there a way that we could be more cost effective? Like, how can we take a more interesting approach or different approach to really, you know, manage the benefits? So I think when we came in with a different perspective and a different take, especially with the technology, people were listening, and that's really what's been helping us grow.
And then with respect to the changes, like the digital infrastructure changes and the importance that's had on the growth of the business, like, when did that start? Because you guys started the business in the late 90s, as you said, you know, you've gone through some tech booms there. At which point did you start developing like this ARC Connect technology platform?
This platform took us, you know, over a decade before we went live. I think this was like more 05, 06, where we started the development of it. And we really went live come that 2018 window. So a lot of years went into building it so that it can do what we envisioned it to be able to do.
And is there any like tech background in the family? Like, how did this come about? Because I know one of this siblings has a legal background. Maybe yeah, you can speak on yourself as well. Yeah. So where does the tech come in?
So one of my brothers, you know, when he was going through law school, he kind of paved his own way by coding through passion, you know. And so we developed quickly this when we were deciding to get into this business. You know, where do we all fit in? You know, one was software, myself was in finance, and it was just, you know, how can we, you know, build and frame a product that makes sense and offers more? So my brother came right out and he just got into coding, and then quickly we brought up other coders and everything was done in-house.
And when you had like, obviously group insurance is not a new business, you know, there's some traditional group insurance platforms there. When you guys came up with this technology, like, what are some barriers or challenges you've had to face with trying to bring this into the industry?
I think the biggest challenge of bringing things into the industry is that it's an industry that's been very, I don't want to say repetitive, but it's been the same thing for a long time. And so explaining to people that there's a different way of doing things that offers a lot more flexibility, a lot more cost control, a lot more options that were not previously awarded or available on the table is a hard concept, because anytime you tell anyone that you can assist them with this, they generalize what their experience has been with group insurance. And so it's changing mindsets when there's a new technology.
And how has that, like, internally for the team, like, how many are you guys now? ARC?
Lost count of the bodies there. We were, you know, much smaller pre-COVID, and going post-COVID, it's really, right, it's really grown us. So there's been a whole bunch of new bodies, and we're still working very much remote. So the team just keeps growing. There's new people, you know, joining all the time. So it's been a much, you know, more fun and interesting dynamic, because you're getting new perspectives, you know, being added on every day.
And in terms of like their perspective from the changes that are happening and how they perceive it, are they excited about these changes, or do they want to kind of stick to the archaic way of the way things were done?
You know what? I find it's very well-received, because we're not really a place that fosters the juniors. Like, we're not bringing in people that are green, because we're growing fast. And so we're trying to bring in people that have experience. And when they're coming in and they know the industry very well, they're surprised as to what we're doing and how far and how technologically advanced it is. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of positive feedback so far.
And you guys, like the family, the Amirani family, you know, yourselves, how do you, like, is there challenges that you have in working together? Is that a natural fit? Because I know, you know, personal life and business life are two different things. So how do you guys make that happen?
You know, one of the biggest things that we're blessed by is working with each other, because building something alone leaves everything on your shoulders. The fact of the matter is if I need that mental recharge where I need to take a second. There's somebody else that picks up the burden. We're building it together so you can rely on people. And I don't think we could have come to where we've come to and build what we have so far without having all of us involved.
And the businesses that you serve, they're mostly local businesses here in Montreal?
All throughout the country, Canada-wide.
Okay, and is there a particular size, like of team members that they have to have for this to make sense for them?
Team size, honestly, it's we all employers of all sizes, but really it benefits more the larger ones because they feel the pain points a little bit more when it comes to some of the things that our platform addresses, like plant flexibility, being able to transfer, not being captive, you know, cost reductions. It's always just on a bigger magnitude the bigger they are. So I think. Those are the ones that are really reaping more and more of the benefits now than ever.
We're talking about benefits, and especially throughout the pandemic, Dan, there was this really reigniting of discussion in business circles around group benefits, taking them to the next level and really digitizing them. How did the pandemic change your offerings?
The pandemic didn't change our offering. I think it brought our offering more into focus, into the spotlight, because during this period, don't forget, like I had mentioned previously, a lot of people were not taking the time to really hear about different pivots or different technology. They just kind of thought the benefits way was operating always the same way as it was previously. And the pandemic hit and it was like a press pause, a slowdown. And a lot of people that had, you know, dinners, galas, this, that, they were at home because they couldn't be anywhere else. And so they were like, you know what, let me take 30 minutes and hear what he has to say. Let me take a different perspective, because now costs are important to us because they're being impacted by the pandemic. And so there was a lot more ears available to you know, and a lot more time available for them to really sit back and to, you know, hear about a different approach and to be wowed by that approach and say, okay, well, let's give this a try, because I didn't even know that was possible. So that you know, pressing pause really allowed us to explore and shed light for a lot of new organizations, and that really helped, you know, push our growth.
Yeah, and I think, Dan, you know, part of talent retention, like a big part of that is providing your team members with certain benefits, making it easy for them to access these benefits, I think is also hugely important. So that's where I think, you know, your digital infrastructure, the platform you guys have set up, can come in clutch for a lot of local businesses. What do you see in terms of like people experience at these local businesses, some challenges that they're facing? I'm sure, you know, you become the eyes and ears for a lot of these entrepreneurs in Montreal. With respect to remote working, like what are some challenges that they're telling you about? And, you know, have you seen any solutions that make a lot of sense that you can share with our audience?
I think what I've noticed is that people are more connected than they've ever been. And so they're more aware of different aspects of want. So there's a lot more requests that are hitting employers more than ever. You know, you see, you know, studies of the 4-day work week, you see people wanting the unlimited time off, you know, where they're not tracking the vacation. You see people just asking in all sorts of different lights, because all these organizations are trying to find ways to be creative to really attract and retain people. And I think that's why there's been such a focus on the benefits field, because it's one of the biggest cost incentives that they have for their employees. And so right now it's, you know, how can we help them be creative and have flexibility without having a ton of burden? You know, a ton of burden, and because it gets very cumbersome to manage if you don't have the right infrastructure to give them.
And what have you seen in terms of changes with like remote working? I know there's been a, you know, somewhat of a push to come physically back into the office. We're now a few years removed from the pandemic. You know, in fact, I think it's almost like we're just past the, I guess, anniversary date, 4 years since we all went through this together. In terms of hybrid working, remote working, how do you personally feel about that, you know, internally with your own business? And then what are the, you know, the comments that you hear from your fellow entrepreneurs?
Look, what I see out there is a lot of the entrepreneurs want employees, for the most part, back in the office. They want to, you know, see them. They want to have that pulse. They want to have that culture. But I think now the reality is that going back in 100% is difficult for most industries. I don't think it's going to find its way necessarily back there. I think hybrid is the right way to go. I think you have to give them an incentive to come in, because it was proven during the pandemic that people can get the work done from home. You know, if you have your work properly defined and tracked and understood, then you can give people that accountability. And again, we're not these old, I don't want to say old generations, but the generation where people just live to work. People now work because they want to live, right? So they want that flexibility back in their life. And so these hybrid environments give them that, you know, your kid is sick, I can still work from home. I don't need to take a sick day. I have a contractor coming by. I have that flexibility. Let me prove that I'm like, not even prove, let me do my work and really just show you that I don't really need to always come in. But it's also nice to show face because you do get things done and you do have better ideas together. So I think the hybrid is really the way to go.
And Dan, can you maybe, shed a bit of light in terms of the flexibility you mentioned with your service offering with respect to how generally in group insurance policies would work for businesses versus how you guys are managing that and how a business can save money through that platform?
Look, benefits as a whole, just to give you, we used to place it, you know, directly with a carrier, and that carrier would, you know, maintain all the benefit lines, and they'd be the ones to process the claims, and they'd be the contact person, you know, if you had a claims issue. And we were just saying, you know, how can we better support and accompany our clients? So we built the software where we took over that adjudication portion, and we have the carriers essentially connect into us and us to the client. So we become that connection point. And the beauty of this for, and I just give you a quick, the beauty of this from like an HR perspective is now that, you know, if we want to introduce a new product or a new service, we don't have to necessarily, you know, have this big cumbersome transfer because our APIs connect out to these other players. So we create like an environment that's very stable for the HR. So they're not being, you know, hit with a bunch of workflow to go find benefits to, like I mentioned, to attract and retain these employees. And from a cost perspective, you know, we're not, there's no way to overcharge in our system. We're basically, the way we're billing them is it's on the claims that are used. So every surplus dollar falls into their account, and it gives them essentially over the year a new way of with that budget to do more for the employees, you know, whether it be add more benefits or stabilize costs, or then because those are not, you know, creeping up anymore, they can look at other benefits like pensions and things of that nature. So by giving them a way of cost controlling and giving them a way to have more flexibility, we're much, much in a better position to take our clients by the hand and really provide them a service instead of just shopping them and moving them, right? We're trying to invest to be better partners to our clients.
And are you seeing, these businesses take some of those savings and put them into, artificial intelligence, develop their own tech platforms and innovations? How are you seeing them reallocate some of these funds that they're saving on the one side?
Honestly, I see them because they get a better pulse now. When they look at their experience, you know, of the group and they see where claims are coming from, they can get a better understanding of what it is that their employees are looking for. So when some costs go down, you know, some of them are saying, hey, listen, let's look into like a lifestyle account so people can look at gym memberships and daycares and services like that because the changing workforce. Other ones say, you know what, let's put more emphasis on mental health now and let's look at employee assistance programs. So like when there's a new budget there and like the costs stop always going up and you're creating a new budget from the premiums they are currently paying, all of a sudden they can be creative because, again, they know the pulse of their people a little bit better. They can turn around and say, like, now we can do more without incurring more. So I think it's been well regarded. So it's not a broad stroke answer because every organization and their demographic responds differently to different needs.
Right. And as far as next for the Amirani family, is this now kind of the tech platform has been built? You're trying to, you're pushing it, continuing to push it to market. Is there something else that you foresee coming into the industry that you guys are already aware of that you want to share? What's next for the Amirani family?
Listen, we have a roadmap that I don't even think will get done between 2030. We have a lot that we're already coding and building and that are in beta and that will be keep coming out to continue to disrupt. The objective is really to, you know, not just be a group benefits firm, but it is to be a tech firm and to continuously find ways through, you know, different tools, different marketplaces, different accesses or APIs. It's just to find a way to create a hub that integrates more for employers. So no, we're not letting our devs out anytime soon to see the sun that's coming. We're keeping them going because we have a lot that we have that we still want to build.
Dan Amirani, thanks so much. We're going to have his one piece of advice for inspiring entrepreneurs is on the way. But first, it's time to prepare for personal tax season with BDO tax partner Ernie Furt. Now familiar, of course, to this show. Ernie, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Yourself?
Excellent. Thanks. It's that time of year, of course, Euros. We have to go through some basics, as we do every year. What's on your mind this year?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I have to say I've had the pleasure of working with Mr. Ernie Furt for 16 years now, Ernie. I don't know if you can believe that, but it's been 16 years. And when I hear the word tax, I almost instantly think of my good friend, Ernie. And since we're now, you know, like you guys said, we're heading into the busiest month for an accountant. Let's hear, Ernie, how, you know, someone can make their local accountant a happy camper as we gear up for this year's personal tax season. So, Ernie, what should a client do to help their accountant?
Most clients stress out during tax season, and it's unnecessary for them to stress out. At the end of the day, look, they give you a call. Oh, my God, what am I going to give you? What do I need to give you? I don't remember what I gave you last year. Okay, so calm down. Take a look at your tax return from last year. Go line by line and put things in order that way. Now, we have another battle that we have to deal with at the same time, because some of us have older clients, some of us have younger clients. Some people are used to giving paper proof, other ones are used to giving virtual proof. And we have those people in the middle who give a combination of both. So some of the paper people, you're not going to change them. So you're going to need to meet them in the office or meet them at their house and go through their tax return one by one, piece by piece, and get what you need at the end of the day. The young virtual people, as long as they organize properly and put things in a proper order, make zip files and all of that good stuff, it's easy to work with. The people in the middle, I would say, let's call them 45 to 65 to 70, in and around there. Those people are sometimes a bit confused, and they don't know how to give you a virtual file, when to give you paper, give you information piecemeal, et cetera, et cetera. So you need to be sure that your client understands how to use a computer. And at the end of the day, you're not getting a bunch of PDFs that say PDF 5, PDF 3, PDF 7, and there's no description on them. You have no idea. So you have to go through all of that, rename it, organize it so somebody can actually look at the papers, make sure they're imported into the tax return, and then make sure they can be reviewed. Because if you have a bunch of PDFs that are misnamed, you don't know what you're doing. The worst thing is mixed stuff. You know, you have mom, dad, kid A, kid B. Organize the papers by mom, dad, kid A, kid B. Certain things are common, like medical expenses. Organize them in that order as well. Mom, dad, kid A, kid B. Donations. Take the donations for the family. Make an Excel list. There's people who have massive amounts of donations, but a whole bunch of little ones in there. So if you make a list in Excel, then give us all the receipts. Then we can check them off one by one and make sure we have everything complete. And say on the tax return, see attached list, then the CRA and MRQ will give us a call saying, excuse me, attached list, can you please provide it? And then we go, here you go. And we've checked the attached list, so we don't have to check it again. And then we just send it off to the client at the end of the day. It's very important. Organization is key to the tax returns. Because if you don't have that organization, then your accountant is going completely crazy, trying to figure things out. Where do they belong? What am I missing? Et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely, Ernie. And I think, you know, I can speak for myself when I say I'm very lucky. I have a lot of sophisticated clients that are used to the drill by now. But in terms of data dump, I think you hit the nail there. Data dump is a big challenge, right? You know, so you have some people that'll throw everything at you, at their accountant, except for the kitchen sink. And I think you described it well there. Being organized is instrumental, you know, for your professional help that you're getting for tax preparations. What are the most interesting or weirdest items that you've seen in your experience? I'm sure you've seen quite a bit of.
I've seen a lot of stuff over the years, a lot of stuff. One time I had a client come to the reception area with a shopping bag with handles on it. So all of a sudden, I'm taking the shopping bag and I'm picking it up and down and moving it side to side. The client said, what are you doing? I said, I'm weighing it. We charge by the pound. I said, why don't you take this back, get rid of all the envelopes that you have there, organize it properly so we don't have to do it, because we're going to be charging you to do this. So therefore, I would appreciate if you can organize it. In addition, I've seen unopened checks from the government of Canada, checks for over $10,000. In there that have been unopened for months. look at the stuff you're giving us. I don't need to see your cell phone bill. I don't need to see all kinds of weird stuff and your Visa statement, your Amex cards. Organize it with tax stuff. Give us what we need. Give us our donations. Give us our medical. Give us our T4s, T5s, T3s, capital gain summaries, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever you do, don't give stuff to us piecemeal. Basically, what you what some people do, and I've done it with a lot of clients, is I go over last year's return. I send them an email. This is the stuff that was there last year. Give it to me in the following order, please. That's what I try to do.
And one last quick question. When do you want to receive this information, Ernie?
As soon as possible.
Oh, I thought you were going to say April 29th. I'm just kidding.
Ernie Furr, tax partner at BDO Canada. Thanks as always, Ernie.
It's always my pleasure. Have a great day.
Now, as we come to the end of our show, let's turn to our entrepreneur and ask him for his one piece of advice for inspiring entrepreneurs. Daniel Amirani of ARC Group Benefits, what do you think?
I think the biggest thing I've learned, and it goes even with the title of partnerships, it goes, you know, with the fact that I have a family business and things that I mentioned earlier, people have a much deeper understanding of what they want today. So I think, you know, finding and fostering an environment within the company is key because you want to help them achieve that as well. And I've always taken an approach that is more collaborative when it comes to other brokers, to carriers, to employees. It's finding a way to achieve a desired outcome for everybody. Because I have this like mindset that if you wanted to build a pyramid, you can never do it alone, right? You need people. You need to do things in a collaborative approach to get there. And so really find ways to not just see how it can benefit you, but how can you benefit as a whole collectively? So it's just taking a much bigger approach, and it might be slower, but it builds stronger bonds. It builds a better business.
Thanks very much, Dan Amirani from ARC Group Benefits, for joining us on Inspiring Entrepreneurs. Euros, final thoughts?
Yeah, speaking on mindset, you know, I think as the famous football coach Vince Lombardi once said, having a winning mindset, winners never quit and quitters never win. So I think that's important to understand that failure is the opportunity to begin again. So don't give up and keep chugging along.
Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Thank you.
A reminder, you can subscribe to Inspiring Entrepreneurs as a podcast on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or your favorite platform. And we'll see you back here next week with Mike.
This has been a production of TNKR Media. Good talk.